like, this war may have been inevitable, may have happened, it probably would have happened, but potentially several hundred years later.
But we'll start again, I just kick the table.
Do you want to back? We're quietly obstructing Peter's arguments. Hello, welcome to a poorly informed podcast. I'm Theo, I'm your episode host this week, and with me are Peter, Max and Will. We're a podcast that likes looking at the big questions, the important questions, the historical questions. So this week, we are going to be looking at what are the most important wars in history. It's a big question, and we're going to just have a fight about it. So before we go into each of our favourite wars, let's just make this a bit harder for us. We're not going to be talking about World War One or World War Two. That's too easy. We're not going to be talking about any wars during or after the Cold War. So no Afghanistan, no Korea, Vietnam, Falklands, anything like that. And we're focusing on wars here, not battles. Full scale, the full thing. No time to waste. Let's get on with it. What are the most important wars in history? So let's introduce what the most important wars are. So I'm going to go around to summarise your wars, why it's the most important in a single sentence, if that's possible for you, Max. So, Max, what's your contestant?
Well, mine are the Napoleonic Wars, so I've already done the question wrong. I'm going to say they started in 1799, when Napoleon seized power, all the way up until 1815.
And why is it the most important war out of all the wars that have happened in human history?
I think because it's the first time that the ideal of a nation at war was introduced. It's the first time that a country and all the country's production had been geared towards war, and it was just a massive scale war between...
Okay, that's enough. So, Will, what is your option? What are you going to put forward?
Okay, well, so I was upset I couldn't do the easy choice of the First World War, so I chose the next best thing, which is the Russian Civil War.
Okay,
this happens from 1917 to 1922, and is essentially how the Soviet Union was formed out of the mess of various different armies, all named after colours, very helpfully. The whites, the greens, the reds, and the blacks.
And this is the most important war because...
And this is the most important war because it led to the formation of the Soviet Union in the way that it existed, not as it could have been, and therefore caused A, Nazis not to win World War II, and B, the Cold War.
Okay, fair enough. So you've got Napoleonic Wars, which is the Emperor of France trying to take over Europe. You've got Russian Civil War, which is the communists fighting off various pro-czar, pro-government forces. Peter, what's your contribution?
I am repping the 30 Years' War, which was essentially just a massive European throwdown. Over who was going to be the big boys of Europe. It was going to be France or Austria.
Yeah.
And
was that provoked by religious discussion?
Oh, yes. It started with, like, Protestant versus Catholics.
Okay.
But then you had the Sunni Ottomans and the Catholic French, like, oh, yeah, let's help the Protestants.
Okay,
against the Pope. So it wasn't exactly...
Yeah.
Religious-based.
And the most important, because...
Because the treaties that ended the war essentially defined how wars would be ended and how, like, the very ideal of European nation-states for history.
So, you three have got your wars. As a host, I'm going to be throwing in quite a few other suggestions as well, pointing out why your arguments are flimsy. You missed out quite a lot in history, obviously, there's only three of you, so... I'm going to be throwing in quite a few other honourable mentions, as they were, to keep us thinking. So the first one, the first honourable mention you guys have missed out, is the US Civil War. Okay, American Civil War. So you've talked about Napoleonic Wars, talked about the Russian Civil War. Missed out this massive, explosive conflict in human history, turned America into the world superpower. The three combined battles of Vicksburg, Gettysburg and Antietam, you're looking at 65,000 dead. You're looking at 65,000 casualties, sorry. You're looking at ruined infrastructure. The 13th Amendment, which illegalised slavery. Emancipation Proclamation. The increase in the civil rights movement. It overhauled the entire continent. Why are your wars more important than the American Civil War? Go on, Max.
Well, I'd say it's because it's generally concentrated to North America. Like, you can argue that it gave, you know, it sort of led America on this path of being the global superpower. But I'd argue that either way that was going to happen. Whether the southern states won or the northern states won, it would happen. I think it's only really revolutionary in terms of like having a big impact in America domestically rather than globally.
But if North America was now the superpower, that was going to impact the world. And all the Napoleonic Wars did was ruin countries and devastate their infrastructure, with the exception of Great Britain, which was in the middle of its Industrial Revolution.
Actually, it didn't devastate infrastructure because with the, what was it, the Congress of Vienna, Prussia got given lots of industrial lands. It got given Westphalia and the Rhineland, which are both heavily industrial areas within Germany, and that led to them being a very industrially powerful nation in Europe, and that led to them eventually Germany competing with Britain being the most powerful industrial nation.
Okay, and that, I suppose you could say, yes, eventually Prussia caught up, but that's 60 years down the line. At the time, Britain was in a position where it could play countries off against each other. Napoleonic Wars, you can't seriously argue that they industrialised Europe. In fact, they probably set it back several years because of the sheer amount of dead, the sheer amount of missing, and the fact it distracted Britain at a time when it was in its own war with America, the War of 1812.
Well, the War of 1812 was kind of caused by the Napoleonic Wars.
Okay, fair enough.
And it's only a side, small, well, but it, say small, but it's basically a small
war.
But
Napoleonic Wars did not do any great improvement to Britain. Everything that came out of it was designed to do better rather than to build on its own success.
Whereas I disagree with that, because for once I actually kind of support Max on this a little bit, because wars at the time where innovation like skyrockets, like you look at any war and it's crazy how much you need to push technology forward in order to win. So I think with Britain sort of being in the driver's seat, it's going to be beneficial, it's going to push them forward, because relative to everyone else is behind, which just allows them that much more freedom to conduct things how they wish,
yeah,
without restrictions.
So in reality, the main fallout of the Napoleonic War was Britain becoming the world leader.
So obviously Napoleon, of course, did solidify Britain's place as the most powerful country in Europe, seeing as France was no longer that and Russia was Russia. But what you're saying about it didn't lead to any innovation or industrial thing, it did, because Britain became the leading arms manufacturer in the world at this time. There was the start of the Industrial Revolution in armaments occurred during the Napoleonic Wars, and that was how they managed to supply all these massive armies, which before no nation was ever able to field an army, but have an army of more than 200,000 people.
Okay, that's interesting. I think the problem here is that Napoleonic Wars were mainly good because they helped one country become greater than all the others.
Oh, I'm not saying they're good. They were pretty bad results.
Only important.
Yeah, and yes, also significance. So moving away from Britain, because we all know, you know, naval supremacy and Britain's place at kind of the head of Europe was solidified. But there's also Prussia, which is my sort of second go-to argument, and how Napoleon, you know, dissolved the HRE in 1806, which led to the setup...
The HRE being...
Oh, the Holy Roman Empire, which has existed in Europe for hundreds of years.
Hundreds.
I was waiting for Peter to tell me the exact year, because that's the kind of thing he knows. So Napoleon dissolved that and set up the Confederacy of the Rhine, which eventually, over time, allowed Prussia and Austria to swallow up smaller states that used to be protected by the HRE and were now no longer, leading to Prussia to get more powerful and eventually lead to creation of Germany. And then that's World War One.
But wasn't Napoleon only able to prey on those smaller states because they'd been destroyed in the 30 Years' War?
I mean, the 30 Years' War was...
It was a while ago.
A wee bit 150 years before.
Okay, fair enough. But the state still hadn't rebuilt as a unified nation.
So the end of the 30 Years' War essentially marked the death of the Holy Roman Empire as a functioning unit.
Okay.
Because the emperor, Austria, got so thoroughly humiliated and 8 million Germans died, essentially, that all legitimacy that the Holy Roman Empire had essentially went at that point, which allowed for France to, who were then the powers, France became the European superpower after the end of the 30 Years' War, to, Napoleon to bully these countries.
So, frankly, anything important that came out of your war, Max, was entirely dependent on the destruction waged by the 30 Years' War, which, through the basis of cause and effect would make the 30s War far more important as a conflict.
But I think the issue with that is then we're just going to keep going back in time and what war came beforehand.
No.
And that's not
true.
That's not sustainable.
You could, but there are a couple of things. Like, so you talked about how the German state was formed, like Prussia formed the German state.
Yeah.
A large set of reasoning behind the formation of the German state was due to the devastation of the 30 Years' War, saying, we can't, look what happens when there's a divided Germany. Look at the fact that 20% of Germany died at least. Like, our children are dead, our fields are barren. Let's all be in one big, happy, strong country. So you
yes,
can't say that Prussia was formed, or like Germany was formed as a result of the Napoleonic Wars, without also saying that it was formed as a result of the 30 Years' War.
Oh, I'm not denying that's a contributing factor, but what was the time difference? You said like 150 years. They hadn't done... Well, obviously they made little steps of, you know, swallowing other smaller nations, but there's still 150 years where this didn't happen. The Napoleonic Wars kind of kick-started, I suppose, or at least directly contributed to an acceleration of the process of creating a newly unified Germany.
And is it fair to say, okay, the 30 Years' War was responsible in some form, but... It's hardly fair to lessen the Napoleonic Wars because it was indirectly responsible on the 30 Years' War, surely? Because, as Will said, all wars are indirectly or directly responsible for one another, going back to the first conflict in the Mesopotamian Crescent.
That's true, but I don't agree with Max on anything, so...
Fair enough.
How many people did your wars kill?
Oh, mine... I'm doing this off the top of my head from something I read a while ago in a different argument with Peter, actually. It was probably about a year ago. I think it was something like 14 million casualties, including civilians.
So across the entirety of Europe?
Yeah, across the entirety of Europe throughout all of the Napoleonic Wars, so from about, I don't know, 1793 to 1815.
Okay. How many did you say?
14 million or something, I think.
Well, I've just got on Wikipedia, says about 6.5 million.
Oh, that
is that
quite
including civilian casualties?
Yeah.
Was that including the Revolutionary War, though?
Yeah, because that's what...
That might... That
and is this France
different.
Only? Because there were almost a million French military casualties across the wars, so...
French Empire lost, like, over a million casualties. It just their, like, military, and then 600,000 civilians, blah, blah, blah. But I think it was, like, 6 million total. Which is significantly less than the 8 million dead from the 30 Years' War, which was also in a time when there was less people to actually die.
That's true. That's quite a good point, because you hadn't got the concentration of populations, urban centres, manufacturing regions,
mm-hmm.
as you did in Napoleon's time. So proportionally, 30 Years' War certainly killed more people.
In terms of military deaths, though, about 90% of the deaths in the 30 Years' War were disease and famine. So not so much like massive battles, just destruction of infrastructure.
And they found at the Battle of Stalingrad in World War II, if you are under extreme stress or if you are under extreme pressure, as often in conflict, you're less able to take in food, your immune system's weaker. So actually we can attribute that as a side effect of conflict. So I'd say it's a perfectly legitimate death toll to include in the final count.
I'd agree. However, that took 30 years... for those 8 million deaths.
Two generations, yeah.
Two generations. So a significant... So that's... Per year, the death count is rather low, all things considered. Whereas, I'd argue mine essentially killed quite a few people, although very, very few in fighting. And the estimates are wild. People think that during the Russian Civil War, between 7 and 12 million people died. And there is no consensus on the numbers, as far as I can tell.
Plus, couldn't you then go on to say that under Stalin, all those people that died could be a direct consequence of the Russian Revolution as well?
Yes,
true,
as well.
True.
And the numbers on that are, again, hard to estimate and all sorts of things. But what I would say is the reason why I think the Russian Civil War is the most important is because without it, the 20th century would have looked so different. And in a time where everything's sort of changing so much, I think it has more of an impact on world history than a war that happened 200 years before, just because of how different things could be now. If your war ends slightly differently and Austria comes out on top, does Europe look significantly different today?
Probably not. It would... No.
Whereas without the Russian Civil War, you wouldn't have a communist dictatorship, you wouldn't have the nationalism that we see in Russia today, going back to the days where they saw themselves as great and mighty in the Soviet Union.
I would argue that one of the main things was that I think if a non-Bolshevik power or a non-extremist communist power of some kind doesn't get in control of the USSR, then policies like collectivization and the five-year plan to rapidly industrialize don't happen. These, of course, killed millions of people, but at the same time, they were the reason that the Soviet Union wasn't the same as Tsarist Russia and could stand up to the Nazi invasion.
But would
so
Hitler
I would say,
have invaded Russia if it was a Bolshevik dictatorship? Would, because he hated communists, this is known, would he have invaded if it was a hard right monarchy?
That is not something I know, but I think with the change of that in itself, because if you could imagine a Russia either neutral or siding with the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
massively changes how
yeah.
the war is fought.
Yeah.
I mean, they have oil and...
Speculative, though.
Yeah.
But like, he's got a point.
But that's why I say I think the Russian Civil War has more potential impact than... because it could have gone either way, and if it did, there was more potential impact there to directly affect, like... insane amounts of things today.
I would say though, you make a point with like the fact that it doesn't really matter so much who won the 30 Years' War, but I think my biggest argument is not about like the results of who won, it's about what happens when the treaty that was signed. So this is like my main argument here. It's called the Peace of Westphalia, and it established the like idea of a nation and the idea of a nation state, as in a country has like supreme control of everything that's within their own borders. Before that, that wasn't an idea, that wasn't a thing. It took until this war to establish the idea of a European nation state, so like France couldn't just go and tell the Mainz or Lübeck that they weren't allowed to be Protestant anymore. You know, Austria had to respect whatever the Ulm did to their serfs. You know, they could do whatever they wanted within their own borders. And this became the European way of like government, of diplomacy. It also set like the precedent for solving a war with diplomacy. It was the first one where it was like a diplomatic congress to solve a major war, and it wasn't just, oh yeah, we'll just take this, draw a new line on the map. Like 109 representatives from different countries went to talk and they settled it.
But if you're saying that the most important thing about a war is the peace, could that not have been achieved anyway? Was that so dependent on the 30s
yes.
war happening?
It took this much destruction for the war, like for this peace treaty to be signed, and it became the European way of doing things,
but
that became the world's way of doing things.
But surely the way you phrase this war, surely that means it's inevitable. So if it didn't happen then, it could have happened at a different time with the same peace. What makes that this particular conflict above any other parallel hypothetical conflict so unique? What makes this conflict so special?
So, I mean, you could literally say that, oh, yeah, that war could have happened anyway. The results of the war could have happened anyway for any of the wars we're discussing. But
I reckon, apart from Wills.
Oh, okay, yeah, apart from Wills.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But this war, like the 30 Years' War, it essentially shook up the entire way that Europe had been. This war may have been inevitable. It probably would have been inevitable. It could have happened several hundred
probably
years later.
Probably would have been inevitable. Isn't that what inevitable means?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fine. It could have happened, but as a war, it set Europe up for the next since Europe has been. It's like set up modern Europe essentially. It set up the European nation state, which is the world nation state. Set up the European way of doing war. At the end of the war, like the new balance of powers established. It established the Ottomans as like. The major European powers.
How long were the Ottomans the major European powers? If you, because talking about wars, you can argue that, yeah, they set up this country as the dominant power, but that's...
300 years, I'd say.
300 years, because the Ottomans weren't the dominant European power.
They were
a
dominant power
this.
In the Balkans, yes.
They were, but it set them up as powerful enough, like, deterrent to the Habsburgs in Central Europe. It set up France as the leading European power.
Until the Napoleonic Wars, when they weren't.
It sort of was the death of Poland as a
mm-hmm.
major power, the start of Sweden as a power.
Okay, this is fair enough. This is a reasonable argument. So I'm going to change tack. I'm going to say you guys are talking about the influence, both you two, Max and Peter specifically, talking about the influence your wars had on the global setup, on the way wars were done, on the way European society was done. So I'm going to talk about another war that we all neglected, which probably had a similar impact, and that's the Seven Years' War. So this is in the 18th century, from 1756 to 1763, which, if you count, is indeed 7 years. It was between loose European coalitions, and as most European wars are, it started over something stupid in the Habsburg monarchy and over Austria, and then it blew up into a whole proxy war for all sorts of regions. It was arguably the First World War. It decided the boundaries of France and Britain's North American colonies. It was fought in 5 continents. It was the first war that Europeans fought together outside of Europe. Every single major power played a part. And so why is this war less important than the Napoleonic Wars, the Russian Civil War, and the 30 Years' War?
7 Years' War is the 30 Years' War II Electric Boogaloo. The 30 Years' War was essentially an anti-Habsburg containment league. 7 Years' War was essentially the same thing, just repeated a couple hundred years down the line.
But also on a far bigger scale, and with far long-lasting repercussions.
Is that just inevitable with the technology advancement at the time?
That's true, but then that, therefore, does that not make it more important anyway? Because it propelled Britain on the way. Even with the American Revolution a short while later, it put Britain on the path to this semi-isolationist policy, where it played European countries off against each other instead of getting directly involved and of becoming the major world power.
Yeah, because you can argue that the Seven Years' War was directly responsible for the American Revolution.
Exactly, which was then caused a whole other host of problems, like bankrupting France, bankrupting the UK, causing the War of 1812, and partly causing the Napoleonic Wars.
Well, because the American Revolution was influenced by the French Revolution. That's, you know, sort of a heavily established fact, is one of the contributing factors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the War of 1812 is just kind of caused by the...
I like the War of 1812
caused
too much.
By the Napoleonic Wars,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
So...
Okay, but so why is... I'm not hearing any conclusive arguments to why it's less important than all three of your wars.
Because Europe's always had wars of, oh, let's stop the Habsburgs being in charge of everything, or, oh, let's stop the French being in charge of everything. It's just what happens in Europe.
There is a cycle of wars every 100 years in Europe that just sort of rebalance the balance
and
of power.
And I would say the war that started off this cycle was the 30 Years' War.
And also, you can argue that the American Revolution or American independence in general was inevitable as the colonies got more powerful.
That's true. I think the Seven Years' War did have quite a big role in starting that. But
it definitely accelerated it, but I think it's an inevitable thing that would have happened.
But quite interestingly, so it holds no parallels to the Russian Civil War. So how are you going to say that the Russian Civil War is more important than the Seven Years' War, which, as we've agreed, did rebalance European power for another 50 years until the Napoleonic Wars?
I'd say the Russian Civil War, simply by the fact it is so different, it's so difficult to compare it, because A, it's a civil war, and B, you have this ideology that everyone is terrified of that's kind of spreading. And now if you think of other wars, where, like, particularly revolutionary wars, they're scared of this, but in 1917 it really was something different, because there are legitimate fears of this spreading through Europe like some sort of disease, this ideological contagion. And I think it's one of the times you can point to where you can say every major European power, even in the context of the First World War where they're fighting each other, does not want this to happen. It's against peasants, workers, soldiers, farmers, and then a small number, well, actually quite a large number of sort of professional revolutionaries. And somehow this coalition of people under the Bolshevik sort of banner managed to win out against Tsarist forces, monarchist forces, other socialist forces, and major world powers.
Almost every good European country gets involved at some point, don't they? You know,
Pretty much,
America, Britain both send troops in. You've got
France,
the Czech Legion, France.
Germany supports the Tsarist forces, bizarrely. They surrender to them, they now turn around and say, we'll give you a hand.
You're not a European nation if you didn't get involved in the Russian Civil War at the time. So... Okay, so
to make a point on Will's, like, to help Will, I think all the wars we have, essentially, whatever happens at the end of the wars, the countries are pretty similar to how they started, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the American Civil War, it ends in the same union, the same government.
Okay.
30 Years' War.
I think you're oversimplifying the point, but I'm not going to contradict
it. In the Russian Civil War, Russia is not the same after the Russian Civil War.
No, that's true.
You have a complete 180 in the policy and the government controlling the country, which I think in many other places you don't see quite as large of a change.
I think the Russian Civil War, you are making it out as this big catastrophe. I think it was a long time coming. It wasn't a spontaneous combustion as arguably the Napoleonic Wars were. I don't know so much about the 30 Years' War, because you had the Russo-Japanese War in 1895, which angered a lot of people. You had the mutiny on the battleship Potemkin and the revolution in 1905. And then you had fairly sporadic continued revolutions right up until World War One. You have quite a lot of dissent and mutinies during World War One. It's not that surprising that a revolution would come.
But it was a successful one, and an overwhelmingly successful one, which no other, like Germany had a revolution in 1919, it was a few thousand people and they were rounded up by a right-wing militia and essentially that was it, they were gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they had a right-wing one a few years later and there was a strike and then that stopped.
Yeah.
And you see other sort of, and there was one in France about 50 years earlier as well, that was dispatched quickly as well. Whereas this one was a revolution, much like the others were, but it caught on and spread throughout the entire... I mean, this Russia's such a big place, but it spread throughout the entirety of Russia incredibly quickly and mobilised such a large number of people, many of whom weren't soldiers, peasants, workers, and often they were being mobilised forcibly by both sides. It was a brutal war, but it's this time where something that could have happened in many other European countries previously did happen, and had every chance of it failing with the odds stacked against them, but it succeeded somehow and they then owned a powerful country.
Yeah, fair enough, but was its long-term impact that significant? Because 70 years later, the Soviet Union collapsed, disrupted, disbanded, however you want to put it, and now we're looking at a strongman leader of Russia for whom, when you say Putin, it's almost a byword for Tsar-like leadership. So are we now under a semi-monarchist government, again, as though the Soviet Union did not exist in the first place?
I mean, in Russia, I think I'd agree with you. It feels like they're sort of going back. However, if you look at global politics, there's no way you can't argue that the USSR being in existence was probably the biggest event of the 20th century in many ways, because the Second World War looks very different. And then the entirety of the Cold War is set up by this ideological disagreement between these two nations, of the two superpowers, East and West. And without a revolution and a massive change, if Russia's just another European-ish power that's constitutional monarchy and then a weak democracy, then a strong democracy kind of thing, that doesn't happen. You don't get this massive disagreement and the pulling apart of the world into these two camps.
Peter, Max, you're sounding pretty quiet. That's not a sign of agreement, surely.
I don't know. I mean, I definitely agree with Will that, the last century would not have looked the same.
Yeah.
But on what you said about policy and how it was a complete change of policy, I'd argue that the Napoleonic Wars contributed to that as well. Because, obviously, initially they were spreading the ideals of the revolution. So when Napoleon took over basically all of Europe, he abolished serfdom, he reduced the power of the Catholic Church, he spread the features of the revolution, so democracy as well, and sort of equality in courts, so sort of due process, which generally led to those lower down in society being thought of as more equal. And it was European society was changed drastically.
Did that affect the whole of Europe, or was that just isolated to certain places?
Well, it was the land that Napoleon took, so all of Europe, yeah. So
the British legal code we have today is largely based on the Napoleonic legal code.
So, yeah,
and the reason why most of Europe drives on the right-hand side of the road is because that's what Napoleon enforced.
Yeah, so the civil law and the Napoleonic codes is still in existence today in America, in most of Europe, and then obviously lots of other countries' laws are based on European laws, so thus based on the Napoleonic laws.
So you're saying laws are based on laws?
Yeah, these are very significant laws.
The definition in the UN of a sovereign nation is almost word for word the definition of a Westphalian sovereignty. Very similar.
Yes, but how you define a nation, there's not much leeway. in how you define a nation.
And
works.
Would there be a UN if it were not for the Congresses of Vienna, which was founded post-Napoleonic Wars as a sort of a BTEC League of Nations, if you like. It's the first idea that a country could come together regularly, and they did, to discuss issues and try and play one off against each other to maintain European peace. That wouldn't have happened, and that led to the pre-World War I coalitions, that led to the League of Nations, that led to the United Nations, were not in the Napoleonic Wars.
The UN would have formed any... Are you seriously saying that the United Nations wouldn't have formed without a Congress of Vienna?
Yes, I am, because the United Nations is so closely based on the League of Nations, and you can't just summon... To us, it seems, in retrograde, so easy to think, oh yes, countries around the world forming, but the first time the country did that was in the Congress of Vienna. Without that first idea of doing something...
The Peace of Westphalia, that's the first diplomatic Congress.
Yeah, but not sustained. Come on, they didn't do a Peace of Westphalia every 5 years.
No.
They did a Congress of Vienna every 5 or 10 years.
I'd also like to say you've changed your pronunciation of Westphalia about 4 times in this podcast.
I don't know how to say it.
So I am seriously saying, because the United Nations undeniably based on the League of Nations.
Yes.
You don't summon the idea of a League of Nations out of nowhere. It has to come out of something. It's such a big, broad concept. It's not like you're lying in bed awake one night and you think about it. It's based off of something you already know.
The closest
similarity were the Congresses of Europe in the 19th century.
Yeah, but there was World War I, which kind of made Woodrow Wilson think, hey, we need something to stop this happening again, which I think is his main motivation for, you know, saying we need a League of Nations.
No, but as a student he was, and the European nations wouldn't have cottoned on, hadn't they seen how well the Congresses worked in the... I'm helping the Napoleonic Wars, Max. Don't undermine your point.
You've gone way too far.
It's the First World War. America then had enough influence that if America wanted to do something, they could have a big influence on the decisions making, and it didn't necessarily have to come from the Europeans.
No, but would the Europeans have joined had they not seen the benefits of European peace?
Yes.
I think
you think America would have just pushed them into it?
Yeah, I think...
Even though they then ditched. It's one of the League of Nations stayed on so long. I would like to attribute that to the fact that the Europeans could see the value in peace.
Well,
the Europeans had just
been through the most devastating war in history up to that point.
Well, yes,
and I think that any country at that point goes, we need to do something differently.
Yeah, well, but I think educated politicians, you know, at the time, they were all grammar school boys, boarding school boys, who'd been to universities. They would have studied and known about the Congresses. Okay, it would have been quite a familiar concept to them. They were quite famous, quite well publicised when they were held. And yes, they did die out after the Franco-Prussian Wars, but they were still prominent. And I think, I'm not going to say they had no part in forming the League of Nations. I think they were there in the minds of the diplomats setting it up.
I mean, although you're defending me here, and thank you, but I'd just like to say that wasn't the main reason why the League of Nations failed was because its members didn't respect it.
Well, yeah,
and didn't respect its decisions. So Italy didn't respect its decisions when, what was it? Was it
Abyssinia,
and was it Corsica?
Greece.
Yeah,
Corfu.
Down the sea, and it's an island somewhere, yeah. So that was Greece not Greece, that was Italy not respecting the League's decisions.
Well,
so surely if they held it so highly as a result of the Congress of Vienna, they would respect
it. Well, you can't run on something for several years on an idea. You have to have practical success, and the League of Nations wasn't well run. The United States didn't stay and help. The USSR wasn't allowed in. So once it got into motion, it started to creak and started to fall apart. It couldn't sustain itself on remembering the Congresses of Europe. But can we bring it back to the point? We've had this nice tangent. Let's go back to motion.
I was going to bring on the most important point. Defenestration.
It's a cool word.
It's a cool word. It means to chuck someone out of a window, and it's used almost exclusively when talking about the 30 Years' War. Therefore, argument done.
So you invented essentially a word for the war that was...
Chucking out... So if I were to defenestrate Will, I would chuck him out the window. And sort of like...
On the first floor, it's not going to do that much damage.
Sort of,
actually,
still raising as well, so
yeah.
Just bounce off. Yeah, I saw some like Bohemians did to some Austrians they didn't like. Chuck them out the window. And that started the war.
Didn't one of them survive?
I think
it was a diplomat.
I would be impressed if they did.
It was a pretty high window. Like, it's like, what was it, 10 stories, 7 stories high?
I imagine they'll take them to quite a high window.
Anti-defenestration. I still feel like civil war hasn't been properly examined. We keep in attacking it, we keep bringing it back to our own wars. I think there's more.
Look, it's that unique. That's the thing about.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, because me and Peter's wars can kind of be. They're very similar. They were a big European conflict.
Just people shooting each other with guns.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, changed the balance of power in Europe, but that then changed later on again. Whereas the Russian Civil War is, well, although the French Revolution is that's a civil war with socialist ideals, kind of, that drastically changed the way a country was organised. The Russian Civil War is the only one we're arguing about now.
It's fair enough, but it's an important war. No one has disputed that. Why is it not the most important war? Why is it never seen? Why, when you have a list, bar World War I and II, why is it never at the top?
Well, I would say I'm going to just do a statement here, not knowing if it's entirely accurate. How many revolutions did the Russian Revolution sort of inspire? How many successful ones?
Essentially one. That was the whole thing. There was this big split between... there were people pushing for a sort of a revolution in one country, and people pushing for a revolution in many, like a global workers' revolution. But after the Kronstadt Rebellion, it was essentially a socialist uprising in Bolshevik-controlled territory, and they wanted things like free speech for the anarchists in particular, and trade unions and stuff like that. So it was definitely still a very, very left-wing socialist kind of uprising, but it was an uprising against the Bolsheviks because conditions for them were getting that bad, and that essentially told Lenin. He made a statement afterwards saying at that point, like, he knew, and like everyone knew, that no more revolutions were happening because nobody wanted to go back to essentially what was Tsarist conditions.
That's a lie. There were no more communist-based revolutions in Russia.
Yeah, I was talking more globally.
Next door in China was potentially the most successful communist revolution the world's ever seen.
It takes 40 years to happen, though. Yeah, sorry, 30 years. I can't do maths.
It's fine.
But if we're talking about just directly during the war, it was the one, but it was a big one. But then, of course, later on, I mean, if you're talking about the impact on the Cold War, you've got revolutions popping off left, right, and centre.
Yeah. I didn't know about the question. That's quite interesting.
Well, I think it would be hard to argue that the Russian Civil War is not an important
war. No, we're not going to, but neither of you are giving conclusive reasons why wars are more important.
I was making a point, but I keep getting interrupted.
I think my war's the most important.
Shut up, Joel. The thing I was talking about inspiring other revolutions is that, the Napoleonic Wars directly led to independence of Latin America. So you've got when Napoleon goes into, starts the Peninsular War in 1807 and causes Carl the IV and Fernando the VIII to abdicate and put his brother on the throne. That led to most of the Spanish Empire declaring independence. So you've got civil wars, rebellions, and all of that. And you've also got Bolivar. Bolivar, that's the one.
That's quite a mispronunciation.
Hey, I'm
you
not
threw an extra I there.
Yes, you got him. He was largely responsible for independence in Latin America and sort of Mexico and the rest of it. He was inspired by the ideals of enlightenment that the revolution spread, and he also watched Napoleon's coronation, and he saw the power and sort of devotion that was on display there, and that was one of his motivations for doing what he did.
And as you say, the Peninsular War, which is when Britain invaded... France invaded Spain, and Britain re-invaded, tried to kick him out, and all during this, Spanish control of Spanish control of Latin America collapsed, and they started vying for independence, and the reason we have South American country today is because of the French Revolution. Yep. And even the Russian Revolution, even the Russian Civil War, in all its knock-on effects, didn't create as many new nation states as Napoleonic Wars.
But I would argue it produced more important nation states.
You're saying Latin America isn't important?
I'm saying compare the effects of Latin America on the 20th century to the USSR the 20th century.
You say that's true, but not a major conflict.
But Napoleonic War both overhauled Europe. I mean, even more than the Seven Years' War and the 30 Years' War did. It gave it a right kick up, and then it also had knock-on effects in North America, in South America, in Africa, in the Philippines, and bits of Asia.
You could argue the same thing for the 30 Years' War. So
what revolutions were after
the Netherlands existed? Bam, yeah. That's important. They had colonies everywhere, all of Indonesia, India. Then it's Switzerland, independent. Bam! That's
what
the thing
has Switzerland done since?
They sat in their mountains and hoarded gold. Brandenburg, Prussia. Boom! They're powerful now. Sweden. Damn, you're looking thick there, Sweden. That's not what I'm arguing.
You literally just say you're looking thick there.
That's not what I'm arguing, why it's the most important thing. That's good. That's what... is. You can't say that it didn't change the map. What I'm saying, though, is it is the most important war because it set up Europe. It created the nation state. Before that, if you didn't like how a country ran their internal businesses, you could tell them to change it and then walk in and change it for them. You can't do that anymore.
No, and I suppose that makes it more important than the Russian Civil War, because again, an old friend, cause and effect. Without the nation state, there would be no civil war to rise up against, because there would be no Russia to exist. I suppose the issue I have with the peace treaty is Europe was not Europe on its way to becoming a nation state already, because it had slowly been progressing from city-states, it's slowly been progressing from feudal systems into a more open society. Surely it would have got there anyway, obviously it would have taken longer without the 30th War and the Treaty of Westphalia.
Almost certainly. But this is the war. So this is the thing that you write down for the reason why the countries exist, which is why it's important.
Convincing.
Yeah.
I'm out of arguments.
I'm not really sure how to respond to that.
It was just an irrelevant tangent.
Well, no, it was relevant. It's just... for the same reasons it's difficult to argue, it's difficult to argue against.
They're not directly compatible.
Yeah.
My last honourable mention is... we mentioned it when we were chatting before the podcast earlier. Perhaps the most significant wars that the West forgets about, the most significant empire that wasn't Venice, the Mongol Wars. the Mongol Wars, which, I mean, destroyed the entirety of Asia as it was in the 1200s and the 1100s. The Mongol Wars, which swept through the Middle East, which swept into Europe, which changed the game of the Eurasian steppe and of most of the world for a substantially long period of time.
I did think about doing the Mongol Wars. I did some research, because I like the Mongols.
Yes,
haven't noticed.
They are the... it's,
go
it's,
back, watch our first episode on Greatest Empires through History.
Second most, like, deadly conflicts in history. However, I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do the Mongol Wars, because it's goddamn 130 years, and that feels like cheating. And I don't want to do 130 years of history and 130 years of war. You'd have to... I think... It is unfair. You shouldn't count it because it is.
It's just a lot of series of smaller conflicts.
Yeah, that's
it?
True.
It's one war against whoever's next to them, and then, oh, we own this now. We've got new neighbours, let's take them. It's just... so I don't think it's not a war. It's wars.
Yeah, fair enough. Like the Napoleonic Wars.
However, they were... the Napoleonic Wars were between basically England and France all the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
It was like... Napoleonic Wars, you could argue, was just a continuation of long war between two people.
Yeah, Britain was basically at war since 1803 until the end.
Yeah, fair
constantly.
Enough. Okay, so we have argued a lot and decided on absolutely nothing.
I think I win.
I think I win.
Pete hasn't said it yet, so he lost.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what happened. Thank you for listening. We're not entirely sure. This is going to be quite a long edit for Will. Sorry about that, Will. But thank you very much for listening. If you have any ideas or any... which war was your favourite? Who is best to listen to? Which arguments are the best? Let us know. Our website...
you win if it's mine.
Yeah, you win. Our website is poorlyinformedpodcast.wordpress.com. I'm not entirely sure that's correct. We're on Twitter at poorlyinformedpodcast. Our email is poorlyinformeddiscussion@gmail.com. Also, another point of interest to us, by the time this episode has been published and released, you will know the results of the US midterm elections, which will be quite significant for Donald Trump's presidency. It's going to be very interesting to see how that turns out. But thank you very much for listening. Have a great morning or afternoon or evening, whatever it is, and thanks.
Woo. Yay.
Simply the most conclusive finish anyone has ever.
How do I end this?
Thanks.
Thank you.
That'll be fine.
Isn't toilet roll just tissues that's not...
Well, it rubs your
they're
nose.
Not as comfortable. Like, if you have a cold and use toilet roll all the time with hay fever, you just end up with, like,
yeah,
a horrendous...
I always use toilet paper and it rubs really
badly. I'm doing some learning here. There's no difference.
There is a difference between toilet roll and...
Functionally,
it doesn't matter. Functionally, it's the same job.